Bill read to us this morning about the rich man and Lazarus. And this is one of those stories that I love to preach from. And I've got several rich man and Lazarus stories, and some of you may think, well, here we go again with the rich man and Lazarus. I hope it's not the same sermon again. Well, it's not. But there are so many things that we can learn from this particular episode that Jesus shares with us in his teachings. You know, we often try to focus on life after death when we talk about this story, because this story gives us a glimpse of the Hadean world and the part of it that Lazarus was in and the part of it that the rich man was in as well. But today I want us to look at this lesson with a little different idea. I want us to discuss why this rich man, who seemed to have everything going for him, was lost. You know, as we look at this story, we are going to find out that he was lost more because of his attitudes than actual actions or sins that he committed in his life, at least based on what we know from the story that was told to us. So today, let's answer the question, why was the rich man lost? And the first thing I want to suggest to you is that he was lost. Simply, he did nothing. And you know, usually, when we are accused of doing something wrong, what's the first thing that we do? We deny doing anything wrong. Well, I didn't do that. I didn't do anything wrong. We learn that as children, don't we? We learn really quick to point our finger at somebody else and say, I didn't do that. You know, that is sometimes pretty effective if you have brothers and sisters growing up in the house with you. See, it never worked for me because I was an only child. When something, you know, when crayons showed up on the door of the bathroom, they didn't have to look very far to find out who did it. I did it. I don't know why. I guess it was just one of those moments of stupidity that come over me at the time. And I did it. And I did a lot of things. And never could point my finger and say it was somebody else. We love to point fingers, though. And we love to say, I didn't do that. But you know, there is a problem with saying, I didn't do anything. And the reason there is a problem for that is because sometimes we need to do something. You know, James tells us in James chapter 4 and verse 17, this is not what I wanted. Let me back. There it is. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. So we find out here that, you know, sin is not always doing something wrong. It's failing to do something right. Now, as we read the story, and as Bill read for us this morning about this rich man, he had a lot of things going his way. But the Bible doesn't tell us that this man was an evil man. It doesn't tell us that he was filled with bad ideas and bad actions and bad stuff. Jesus did not label him as a murderer, as an adulterer, or as a thief, or any of these things that we link with evil with mankind. The Bible doesn't tell us any of these things. Perhaps he was like a lot of people. Perhaps he was like the one talent man. We know that story. What did the one talent man do? Well, he did absolutely nothing. Perhaps he's like a lot of rich folks today. Perhaps he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and he didn't think he had to do anything. And so he didn't, except just continue to bring in what in his own eyes was his. Perhaps he was like the five foolish virgins. You know, they sat outside of the door of the wedding party for a long time and did not go get oil when their lamps were going out. They sat there and did absolutely nothing until it was too late. Perhaps he was like them. You see, when we deal with sin, we're dealing with two different things. We have the sins of commission, which simply means that you have done something wrong. You have violated a thou shalt not. But then there are also sins of omission, which means you didn't do something that you should have done. In other words, you have violated a thou shalt. So that we're dealing with two different things now when we deal with sin. As we read this story about the rich man, there really are no thou shalt nots in this story. But there are some thou shalts. And so we find here that his sin was doing nothing. The fact is, as Christians, we are expected to do something. We are expected to bear fruit. John, in John 15 and verse 2, Jesus says, "Every branch of mine that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit." Now he goes on to say in verse 8 of this passage, "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples." As children of God, we are to do something. There is to be action in our lives as Christians. We need to produce and reproduce children of God. So there you have it. No fruit, then you are cut off. So here is a man here who is not really guilty of doing something wrong, but he is guilty of not doing some things that he should be doing. He did nothing. Another thing that was wrong with this man is that he was very selfish. And he was very self-centered in his life. I mean, look at it. He was, as the scripture says, he was clothed in purple and fine linen. Now, purple was very exquisite of the day, and it was very expensive. Very few people had purple. It's just like today, very few people have pure gold. It's either 10 or 14 carat, which means it's mixed in with other metals. There is nothing pure. But this was pure. It was expensive. And he lived in splendor. He had everything that he could possibly want that he could get his hands on of that day. If it was available, he had it. You know, this is a major problem today. Our society has developed an attitude among its people that we just go around looking out for number one. Do you know who number one is? Look in the mirror. And there's the attitude. You know, when you look in the mirror to comb your hair, you don't worry about anybody else's hair, do you? You worry about your own. And me, I look in the mirror and I say, "Boy, I wish I had some of mine back." And there's a few of us men who do that, don't we? But we're worried about our appearance. We're looking to project a particular thing about us. And we don't think about the person who may be in the next room or the person across the street or the other people that's coming here to the church this morning. We'll worry about them when they get here and we'll say, "Did you see how they looked?" We like to do that too, don't we? But we have a problem of looking out for number one. Now, let me say this. There's nothing wrong with combing your hair in the morning and wanting to look nice. There's nothing wrong with living at ease. There's nothing wrong with having a joyful life. There's nothing wrong with living in splendor. And I imagine that if the truth is known, everybody in this room lives in splendor compared to most folks on the planet. Wearing expensive clothing is not wrong. This man made it wrong. Because that's what he put his stock into. That's what he trusted. That's what he wanted people to know, that he had purple and fine linen. He wanted to flare himself out so people could see him. Even to the point that he ignored those who had less.
And when you do that, it becomes wrong. When you place yourself upon that pedestal so that you can look down at other people, it's wrong. Another thing that happened to this man is that he had no compassion. He could go to his door, and he could look out that door, and he could see Lazarus laying there on the ground. He could see him there begging for the crumbs that was left from the feast that he had just had inside. He saw him scantily dressed. He saw him sick. He saw the sores all over him. He even saw the dogs as they came up and licked his sores. And do you know what he did? He turned around and went back into the house. Out of sight, out of mind. No compassion. You see, compassion is an inner feeling. It is an ability to understand people's needs and seek to help them. I only worked 3 days this week. In the 3 days last week that I worked, I had more phone calls for people asking for help than I have in the last 3 months. For some reason, around the holiday season, everybody wants something. And they want you to give it to them. So we see a need is there to help people around you. But, you know, we have developed the attitude, well, if their car breaks down, let them call 911. That's what they're there for. That's what State Farm's there for, to get somebody to come out and pay them to do what needs to be done. You hear about a family in need? Let somebody else take care of them. Let the government take care of them. Y'all do know that when we say let the government take care of them, who puts the bill for that? We do. James tells us, if a brother or a sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? Well, it is of no good at all. It is of no value at all. We have lost a sense of compassion for people around us. Now, you know, I know what you're thinking, and I think this too, you know, we live in a city where it happens all the time. And you know, the bigger the city, the more this happens. People will take advantage of you in Albany, Georgia. Y'all know that. And I have seen the same people come to our side door here asking for food, and I turn them away because I know they're just were on their list to hit this particular day. And I know that because they've been here before. I have seen people come to my door, take the bag of food that I give them, go back to their car and mark our name off their list. And I mark their name on my list because I have them fill out paperwork every time they come in. You have to watch for people like that. They will take advantage of you. But believe it or not, there are some legitimate people out there who are in need of clothing, of food, of things to keep them alive and going. And yes, it is our responsibility to help them. And we need to know that. We need to have compassion with people around us. And then another mistake this man made. He laid up his treasures on earth. Jesus tells another story of another man. We call him the rich farmer, who was pretty much in the same boat as the rich man and Lazarus. You see, he had the same problem. He worried too much about himself and too little about those who were around him. And we read of him in Luke chapter 12, and what it comes down to is he has had a wonderful harvest. The Lord has blessed him with a wonderful crop, a wonderful growing season. And he has such a wonderful harvest that he don't have room to put everything. So now he has a decision to make. I can take what I have got that's more than I can use, and I can help those around me who didn't do quite as well, or I can help those down the street who can't work and take care of themselves, and I can give them the things that they need, or I can build greater barns and have a place to store all my food. Which one do you think he chose? He built greater barns. And not only did he build greater barns, he pats himself on the back and he says, I have much goods laid up for many years. I will take mine ease. I will eat. I will drink. I will be merry. And God said, yeah, you fool. What about those down the street who are in need? This man simply said, let them fend for themselves. Let somebody else take care of them. You see, and Jesus understood the needs of mankind. And he was trying to get us to understand the needs of mankind. And they're always there. And they're always the same. And at the end of the story that he told here in Luke chapter 12, he says, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. In Matthew chapter 6, beginning with verse 19, Jesus gives us a warning. And he also gives us a hit with reality. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. A few months ago, I got up in the morning looking for my cell phone, which I had left in my car. I went out to the car to get my cell phone. My cell phone was gone. And so was everything else of any kind of value in my car. Someone had stolen from me that night in my own driveway, in my own carport, from my own car. About a month before that, we go to Pat's car to get in it, and the front of her car is all strewn out with things that was in her glove compartment. Someone had broken into her car to take the things that she had. Now, if you come to my house and you try to open my door, you're going to be greeted with this horrendously loud sound. And hopefully, before you get away, the police will be there. We have had to take measures to see that this does not happen to us again. Why? Because thieves break in and steal. I saw this sign the other day. I want to share this with you. I thought this was really funny. On the door, the front door of a house, it said, if you try to go through this door, the alarm will sound. If you come through this door, my Smith & Wesson will sound. And I love that. And I, if I could find one, I'd almost buy one of those. We have to take measures now because people will break in and steal from us. And it costed me $300 because I had to buy another telephone. Now, I've never paid $300 for a phone before, but to get the one I wanted, I did. And you can't go to insurance for something like that. Do not lay up for yourselves these treasures. Don't depend on them. Don't count on them because they can rust, moth can decay them, or somebody's going to take it away from you. And we have to be careful that we do not allow that to happen. You see, this man here, along with the rich man of our text, they gave no thought about anything but themselves and what they had and how good it was for them and how it was sustaining their lives. They gave no thought to God. They gave no thought to heaven. They gave no thought to eternity. And of course, Paul had not come along yet, but Paul later comes along in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7, and he reminds every one of us that we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can take nothing out. So that tells us that, you know, we can't depend on the things of our lives to take with us and sustain us. Now, I'm fixing to nail you to the wall. We can't take it with you. We have preached that. We have been told that since we were big enough to understand anything. You can't take it with you. Well, let me tell you, my friends, there is something that you will take with you. You will take with you how you have lived. You will take with you your actions. You will take with you your words. You will take with you your attitudes of life. And you will stand before God with these attitudes and these actions and these words. And God will take all of this information and decide where you are going to spend eternity. Just like He did this man in our story, just like He did the rich farmer in Luke 12, God will take what you have brought with you that is standing with you when you stand before God in judgment and determine from that where you will spend eternity. Lazarus was died and carried to Abraham's side. The rich man died and found himself in the pit of hell. Not necessarily because of something that he did wrong, but because of something that he failed to do that was right. He loved the wrong thing. He placed his trust in the wrong thing. My friends, don't let this happen to you. Learn the fate of this rich man, and don't let this happen to you. My friends, today, if you are not a Christian, you need to answer the gospel call. Answering the gospel call means that you have a faith in God that has brought you to the point that you are ready to move forward and obey the words that He has given to you. It means that you are ready and willing to change your life and repent of the old life that you have had in your existence. It means that you are willing to confess by mouth that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. It means that you are willing to be baptized for the remission of your sins. And if you have done that, if you have answered this call, that's wonderful. You sit here as a child of God. Well, now let me ask you this. Are you living it? We talked this morning about having your name removed from the book of life. And friends, you can have your name as a Christian removed from the book of life if your life is not in harmony with God's will. And today, if you sit here and your life is not in harmony with God's will, you need to change your life and you need to get it back in harmony with God's will. God will forgive you and bring you back into the fold and make you a part of His family once again. Turn your life around and give it back to the God who died for you. This morning, the invitation is yours. If you need to respond, please come while we stand and sing.